Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. It's a magazine you don't have to feel obligated to buy from your nephew's fundraiser. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, free on your radio. Now. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Jeff Sammet, in for Ben Ennis this week, alongside Jeff Simmons, Dave Zarum as well. Guys, thanks for coming in, making the trek in from wherever the heck you guys live. Thank you for doing that.
No problem.
All right. Did that seem insincere? Because it was sincere.
No. I really appreciate that.
I appreciate
your company.
I did hustle to get in here.
You don't really care.
No, I don't really care, actually. I would have done this show by myself. But anyway, it's nice to have you guys here. Appreciate that. We got a lot of bases to cover on the two-hour show. We got to talk NBA playoffs later on this hour. Dave Zarum, try to follow along when we get to that portion of the show, okay? Just try to follow along.
I promise nothing.
Do your best, okay? We'll talk Blue Jays in an hour's time. And Tom Brady, the latest with the golden boy of the NFL.
Oh, man.
Oh, he might get suspended. Oh, isn't that terrible? I hate the Patriots. Let's talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs to kick things off. And as an Islanders fan, I got to admit, guys, I'm confused. There's an inner confusion with me with the Capitals and Rangers because I find myself cheering and booing both teams at different times throughout this entire series. Last night, I was cheering for the Capitals, and they scored. It was 1-0. It was great. And then the Rangers tied things up late, and I found myself cheering about it. And maybe it's because I wanted overtime. And then when the Rangers scored in overtime, I wasn't happy about it. So I don't know what's going on with me, but the Capitals and Rangers, now the series is 3-2 for the Capitals. The Rangers are hanging in there. And Jeff, this is a series that I thought was going to go the distance. I might be right about that.
Yeah, it's been really close. Both these teams are having trouble scoring. It's a lot of 1-0 games, kind of like soccer.
Yeah.
And the goaltending in this series has been ridiculous. Braden Holtby has maybe been the best player in the entire playoffs. And Henrik Lundqvist last night was as good as I've seen him in quite some time. And I haven't seen him that excited about just making a save at the end of the game.
Yeah.
He was skating up the ice cheering. he's a pretty calm, reserved guy. He's got the good hair.
He's got the good hair. Good looking dude.
Yeah.
Good looking guy.
Sharp dressed man.
Yeah, he is. Saw him on Letterman not that long ago.
Yeah, it's almost like the first goal wins in this series. And
yeah.
It could go the distance.
Not every time, but yeah, no. I hear that.
Yeah, it's close.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the most evenly matched series going on right now. I mean,
yeah.
It's probably pretty obvious.
You know what, though? It's what I like about, and look, as an Islanders fan, I hate the Capitals, but the Capitals in that opening series, in the Stanley Cup playoffs against the New York Islanders, they went 7 games. And in the beginning of the series, and I'm not just saying this as an Islanders fan, the Islanders, I thought, okay, they're going to beat the Capitals. Like this, they're outplaying them. They're playing a lot better. Yeah. And then towards the end of the series, like, geez, you know, the Capitals are starting to kind of warm up a little bit. And then that game 7, they totally earned it. And they beat the New York Islanders. But I think that was a good series for the Washington Capitals. As taxed as they were coming out of that series, going 7 games, that was a hard-hitting series. Like that, you could look at it one of two ways. That took a lot out of the Washington Capitals, and maybe we'll be saying that later on. But I think that was an excellent prep for the Washington Capitals moving on, because that's, I think, a part of their game, you know, hitting, throwing their weight around, that's really improved as a result of that Islanders series.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the latter of the two there. I think, you know, they built some kind of momentum, confidence builder, whatever you want to call it, after that Islanders series, which was hard fought, which was well earned, like you said. So to carry that into this series here, I mean, I know the Rangers just made it a lot closer last night, but I still like Washington in this just because, you know, like you're saying, I mean, they proved that they can kind of come up in those moments, and I think they're going to do it again. Whether it's in 6 or 7, you know, I still see them riding this one out. I mean, they have the size. They're pretty deep. And the cool thing about them is, I mean, one of the reasons why I thought the Islanders would beat them is because I didn't think the Capitals would get production from guys that they're getting production from. I mean, Simmons, you mentioned Holtby. He's really stepped up. But some of their young guys, too. I mean, they're going with that kid line with, who's it, Kuznetsov. And
yeah, Kuznetsov has been great.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the Ovechkin show. And I think that's really dangerous for the other teams in the league and right now specifically for the Rangers.
Has Ovechkin, Jeff, really upped his game? Like, has he gotten to another level? I mean, I know, you know, maybe literally he might be getting to another level as he advances in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and maybe they will do so against the New York Rangers. But have you found that he's upped his game to a point now where we might be, because, you know, at the beginning when it was Crosby, Ovechkin, you know, for a while I was like, hey, this is a 1-2, you know, this is, they're very close. And then, you know, Crosby won a Stanley Cup and winning some hardware as well, representing his country. And you start to say, all right, well, it's clearly Crosby. And then Ovechkin's a scorer. Well, now it's starting to kind of come back a little bit. Don't you think it's a little bit more even, Crosby, Ovechkin?
Yeah, Ovechkin's been really impressive this playoffs. And he's only 10th in the playoffs in scoring. But the team plays in such a more structured environment with Barry Trotz. It's really helped him. Before, he kind of freelanced and he'd score the nice goals, mm-hmm. but you saw huge minus numbers on defense. That's not always the most telling thing, but he was almost a one-dimensional player. Now, the Barry Trotz has really tightened up that team. They're a lot better defensively. They have a lot better goalie, and it's helped Ovechkin. He's become a better player, and he's contributing in more areas than he used to, and he's been really fun to watch. The earlier games in the series, he looked like the best player on the ice in any series. And Crosby was fine, but his team just tailed off so much.
They got so hurt, the Pittsburgh Penguins did.
But you know, that was kind of the thing with Washington for years that I felt was that they hadn't really surrounded Ovechkin with the right kind of team, you know, and going into this playoffs, you know, I was having this conversation with a lot of people, was, you know, is this the best team that they've put around Ovi? And I think it's showing that it just might be, and it's a big, like, he's playing really well.
Probably the most complete team.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe not the most talented.
Well, they boned up defensively.
But, like, complementary parts and whatnot
they always had a lot of scores before. But it was all the same kind of players.
Well, adding depth on defense, because we looked at Brooks Orpik being signed and went, that was a lot of money. But it's proving its worth, you know, as they find themselves here in the playoffs. You know, and looking at these two teams, you know, with the Capitals and the Rangers, like, the Capitals, you could look back at the year that was a new head coach in Barry Trotz with a new system, and it looks like the team has improved, as we've talked about. So, if they were to lose in this round, I mean, albeit they had they've won three games in this series, so it would be devastating if they did lose. But getting to this point and bowing out, you'd look back on the Capitals season and say, okay, well, that's great. It's something to build on. But with the New York Rangers, they're not exactly a young team. They don't have a lot coming up. I mean, it was a pretty cool story how Lundqvist was out for a good chunk of time this year and Cam Talbot carried the mail, and the Rangers just, I mean, skyrocketed to the top of the Eastern Conference, and then, of course, you know, winning the President's Trophy. So they come in. I would think that the Rangers would have much more to lose if they bowed out in the second round.
Yeah, that's definitely true. They kind of went all in these next couple, in this little window here. They gave up a lot to get Keith Yandle. They gave up some good prospects. They gave up picks. If they don't go deep, they made the Cup final last year. If they go down in the second round, that's a failure for them. I'm not being into if you're not first, you're last. Like you just mentioned with Washington, I think that's a great example of how a team can still get out early.
Who's that? Ricky Bobby? Ricky Bobby's dad?
Yeah, you can finish second. You can finish third.
If you're not first, you're last.
Yeah. But for the Rangers, to not make the conference final, at least, with this kind of team, and they're a veteran team, and they're six deep on defense, and they gave up a lot to build this team in terms of prospects and picks. So, yeah, I agree. That would be a failure for them.
Yeah. Looking at the other game last night in the Stanley Cup playoffs, so 2-1 Rangers beating the Capitals finally in overtime last night. So it's a 3-2 series lead for the Washington Capitals. But also last night, the Ducks taking that game last night, winning 4-2, and now they've got a 3-1 series lead on the Calgary Flames. Going back to Anaheim, all right, so is the story done with the Calgary Flames? Like, hey, great year. It was a nice Game 3 win, but, you know, they cooked. Are the Flames done?
I mean, what they've shown all year is that they are, you can't count them out because they'll prove you wrong. So they have a resume that they built this year that says that they could still make a go of it. That being said, I think it's pretty unlikely. You know, Anaheim is, they look every bit the better team in the series. Just for the strict story, the storyline's sake, you know, I'd love Calgary to make a series of this, but I think all the evidence kind of points in the opposite direction, which is too bad because it is a great story. But again, this is a young team with really young parts. And at this point, if you look at the kind of the big picture of that franchise, you're just gaining really valuable experience for your young guys by making it this far and by just even just playing in the second round. So win or lose, they almost win either way from that regard.
Yeah, and you know, you look at the young guys, Jeff, and you talk about Goudreau and Sam Bennett especially. And, you know, I say especially because Bennett obviously brought up in these playoffs and has excelled at times. This is valuable playoff experience that I'm sure the Calgary Flames didn't think they were going to give their young guys.
Yeah, and Sean Monahan's another guy, too. He's a key piece for them. He's been playing really well. So, yeah, it's very important for them because they could not have seen this coming. And all the underlying numbers would have told you this was a fluke, but they kept winning and they kept overcoming them. But you see the inexperience. You saw Joel Colburn last night with that high stick.
Yeah.
A 4 minute that's completely swung the game and arguably swung the series. But, yeah, this is great experience for a team like that that really has no business being there.
But it's not even just for the Flames, like good experience for the team. I mean, for these guys' individual careers, I think this is going to really benefit them 10 years from now to have gone through this. You know,
they're going toe-to-toe with this proven veteran team.
Exactly. And I mean, across almost like every sport, there's like a huge list of all the biggest names who had to go through this kind of playoff testing early in their career and get their butts kicked and then come back and learn from it, you know, and be better for it. And I really think that's what we're seeing with Calgary right now. I mean, no, they're not going to win the cup this year. No, they probably won't advance to the next round. But for guys like Monahan, for Goudreau, for Bennett, I mean, this is gonna really help shape their careers, I think. I don't think that's an overstatement.
That's Dave Zarum with Jeff Simmons. I'm Jeff Sambit. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet Magazine Live. Is there a sense of urgency, Jeff, for the Anaheim Ducks to put away the Flames as quickly as possible, given that the Chicago Blackhawks swept the Minnesota Wild?
Yeah, of course. If Chicago gets all that time off the rest, that's dangerous. And Calgary's a scrappy team. They're tough to play against. But Calgary almost never wins in Anaheim. I think they haven't won there in like 5 years. So I think this one's over.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a question here.
I think that can almost go two ways. I mean, Anaheim, yeah, you want to end it as soon as possible, obviously. But if this does go the distance, I mean, you start getting into like potential rust territory for Chicago. I mean, Chicago's a really good, proven team. So I might be making something of nothing. But maybe that's a factor.
Yeah, well, maybe. So maybe Boudreau's telling his guys, look, guys.
Yeah.
Next couple of games, don't worry about them. Let's win this game 7 so that Chicago Blackhawks can be rusty.
That's exactly what I think is happening.
No, but I think there's something to be said for that. That could very well be the case. I'm not sure that is much of a factor beyond like the first period.
Yeah.
Because I think the Chicago Blackhawks, like they're my pick. They're my pick. Like the Chicago Blackhawks
just
have
the
character. Yeah, I mean, okay. I know what you're saying. But no, they're my pick because they're a team with a lot of character. You can never count them out. I don't care what you say in goal. If they flip-flop between Crawford and Scott Darling, you know, that's a team I look at and say you never count them out, and they got a ton of character. I think they're going to be there in the end.
I mean, my dream finals is Chicago-Washington. I think
Gary
just
Bettman
like,
would love you.
Yeah. And I'm doing it for bets.
Yeah.
Doing it for my buddy Gary.
Oh, that's good for you.
But no, I think that's the most compelling series when you look at the names, the stories, you know, Ovi versus this Chicago juggernaut we've seen for so many years.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think Chicago is the favorite overall. I'd love to see them make it all the way, and I'd love to see them do it against Washington.
Montreal-Tampa tonight, is that series over? Is it game 4? I don't think the Lightning showed up at all. I you know, it was in Tampa, so I figured it. But, this game 5 is going tonight. You can watch it on the CBC. Are we looking at this series being over tonight, or you know, the Habs looking good enough in game 4 to make you think that, and the Lightning looking bad enough in game 4 that makes you think that the Habs will win it at home in game 5?
Well, the Lightning have won all 5 of their games in Montreal this year. They're 5-for-5, and they've outscored them almost. I think it was 18-8. So I'd like to say it's over, but.
So what are you trying to say, Jeff?
I would have thought it was over game 4. I didn't think they'd be able to recover from that loss with the 1 second left.
Yeah.
I was pretty surprised how tough Montreal came out and how empty Tampa was.
It was so one-sided.
Maybe they just got too comfortable, like, this is over.
Maybe.
But, yeah, I still lean to Tampa here. They've been playing pretty well throughout the series. And Montreal, outside, unless they got outstanding goaltending, their team is pretty average. And you've seen it all year.
And that's what Montreal has going for them is Carey Price in this kind of situation. Yeah. I mean, also, hockey isn't basketball. When the Raptors were playing basketball, and it took me 16 minutes to bring it back to basketball.
Good
but
for you. Good
thanks.
For you.
But hockey's not basketball. Like we heard a million times, especially when the Raptors were down 3-0. You know, it's never happened in basketball. No one's ever come down from 3-0. But it happens in hockey. Like, I mean, it's really not inconceivable for a team to come back from that kind of a deficit. So there's precedent on Montreal's side. And when you have a goalie like Price, anything can happen.
Oh, sure. He could. He's one of those goalies that could just win you a series. He could win you a cup.
Yeah, exactly. But that being said, yeah. I'm with Simmons. I think there's like overwhelming evidence that shows that Tampa can get this done. It would be such a gut punch for those Habs fans to watch it happen in front of them.
Who would be your Conn Smythe winner at this? Who's been the best player in these playoffs so far? Hmm. Jeff, what do you think?
A week ago, I would have said Tyler Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
And he scored such big goals in the series. And if it wasn't for him, I don't even think they beat Detroit.
Well, I mean, without Stamkos scoring, someone had to. And Tyler Johnson.
They had that two-goal explosion in the third period. And I think it was game four in the first round. Without that, they lose the series. But I've changed my view. After digging into the numbers a little more, I've gone Braden Holtby. And obviously, this requires them being the Rangers. But
yeah,
his numbers have been ridiculous.
Yeah.
And he's carried them in two tough series. And goalies, he had like a .950 save percentage going into last night's game. He's just been so important for that team. And yeah, I'd go him or Duncan Keith right now.
Yeah, I mean, Holtby is probably the most important player to his team's success right now. But I'm going with Patty Kane. I mean, he's just been killing it for the Blackhawks. It's hard to ignore what he's been doing.
Yeah,
especially coming off that injury.
Yeah.
That's hard to do.
It's like he comes off the injury and it's like nothing happened.
And he just kind of, like when he's on the ice, he just kind of disrupts everything. Like his impact is massive, obviously. I mean, Taves is their best player, but I don't think they are. I mean, but they're not in the situation they're in right now without Patrick Kane, especially this playoffs.
Yeah. I think he's been the best of the bunch. So, Montreal, Tampa, in Montreal, it'll be on the CBC tonight. So that series could, conceivably come to, an end. As we continue this hour on Sportsnet Magazine Live, we'll have a look at the, NBA playoffs. Last night, a buzzer beater, memories of Michael Jordan.
Oh, man.
We'll talk about that. And the LA Clippers are cruising to a victory as well. We'll discuss on Sportsnet Magazine Live with Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum. I'm Jeff Sammet. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Brett Popplewell.
Welcome to No Man's Land. A chunk of repurposed soil in East Belfast where the neutral teal of a hockey sweater has replaced the sectarian colors of years past. This is where we find Kevin Westgarth, one of the NHL's discarded enforcers, trying as best he can to put his history of violence behind him. For 8 years, Westgarth held one of the bloodiest jobs in sport, ensuring that everyone on the ice adhered to the code. This is the story of the last pure NHL enforcer to get his name on the Stanley Cup. A Princeton grad who gave up the orthopedic scalpel for the hockey stick. A selfless figure who stood up for every single member of the LA Kings and who may be one of the smartest men to have ever played the game. That's why his former bosses, Brian Burke and Dean Lombardi, believe him destined to someday run his own NHL franchise or even take over as head of the NHLPA. It just happens that Kevin Westgarth's story is set in Belfast, where even the politicians have come out to cheer his name.
This story and more appears in the latest edition of Sportsnet magazine, available on Next Issue and in the Apple Newsstand.
And in Fraser Rose at the top of the circle, Rose for the winner of...
There's a familiar voice, Chuck Swirsky, calling it on Bulls Radio. The Bulls with a 99-96 win over the Cavs. A Derrick Rose buzzer beater. It's 10:30. Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Jeff Sammet with Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Let's talk about the NBA playoffs. Next hour, we'll talk Blue Jays and Tom Brady. But the Derrick Rose buzzer beater last night, reminiscent, Dave Zarum, of Michael Jordan back in the day.
It was as clutch as it gets, no question.
Yeah. Now, the Bulls and Cavs here in this series. Now it's a 2-1 series lead for the Chicago Bulls. What's your read on the series here, guys? You know, with Kevin Love out for the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Bulls can look like one team one day and one mm-hmm. team on another, depending on health and a wide variety of situations and reasons. But what's your read on this series, Jeff? What are you looking at here?
Before Love went down, I thought the Cleveland was going to roll through the playoffs. Mm. And this really closed the gap. And it's going to be really close. And if Derrick Rose is healthy, he scored, I think, 20 of his 30 points driving last night. And that's a huge thing for his game. That's if a healthy Rose just changes everything. Or just like Rose in the top of his game.
Yeah, and Rose wasn't doing that earlier on in the series, right? Like, he wasn't absorbing contact the way he did.
He hadn't attempted a free throw in the first two games.
My goodness.
Yeah. So, yeah, he was completely... And you know, we talked about it with Mike James, who was on the Bulls the last two seasons for our podcast, Free Association, or NBA podcast. And he was saying, like, when you're coming back from the kind of knee injuries that Rose went through, it's the mental aspect more than the physical aspect. Like, you might be physically ready to absorb that kind of contact, to make those leaps into the paint, those kind of like explosive drives that really his game is built off of. But when you're thinking like, crap, you know, one explosive take into the paint and I could hurt my knee again, you know, that's how I hurt it last time. Then you get hesitant and you start pulling up for more jumpers. You start deferring to teammates a little bit more. And that's what we saw in the first few games. But like you just said, man, we saw more assertive Rose than we've ever seen in a long time last night. And if he keeps doing that, it's a whole different series, especially because, I mean, you look at that matchup with him and Kyrie Irving, and Irving is like he's a matador on defense, right? So Rose can exploit him easily, which then throws the whole Chicago defense in disarray, you know, people having to recover and come over to help and whatnot, which leaves other guys open. And Chicago has the shooters that Rose can drive and dish to. So if he keeps driving like that, it's a different series. Also, I mean, you mentioned Love being out. And yeah, if Cleveland was playing, like, let's say Washington or a team like that, missing Love wouldn't have quite the same kind of impact. But against this Chicago team with their depth on the front court and the strength of their front court.
Oh, Gasol, my goodness.
Exactly. Yeah. Taj Gibson, I mean.
Didn't Gasol get hurt last night, though? I think he had a hamstring.
Yeah, but like I expect him to play back. I mean, he's a guy who's been tested. But they can even live with sitting him out. They can live with Gasol missing Gibson a game or two because of Gibson, yeah.
He strained his left hamstring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing with Love too is that if he's gone, it really means that because that team doesn't have the same kind of depth as Chicago or as most teams really, it means that you need another guy to step up alongside LeBron. So last night Kyrie Irving had 11 points. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to get it done. You know, Irving needs to be a 20 point per game scorer consistently because Jimmy Butler has done a really good job on LeBron. Like, I know LeBron has been getting his numbers, but Butler he hasn't been shutting him down, but he's been coming as close as like anyone's come to limiting James.
Well, as LeBron had to play a bigger spot, in terms of size, mm-hmm. because of the injury to Kevin Love, so it's kind of created a bit of a domino effect.
Well, in the first game, they started him at power forward.
Yeah.
And then Cleveland got blown away.
Yeah, it didn't work at all.
Yeah, and then the next game they put him back to small forward. They put Tristan Thompson in the starting lineup, and they won.
Yeah.
I think James is just able to do a lot more from that small forward position, especially when you consider like his passing and his ball handling ability. At the four, you limit him a little bit. That said, he's so good. I mean, he really can play all five positions, right? So you don't worry about that too much. But again, it's you need everyone stepping up around him, and with Love gone, it just means that everyone else has to be that much better, and it's hard to rely on a lot of those guys.
Well, Jeff, as you mentioned with Gasol, he's going to undergo some tests today. So if he were to miss the next game, I mean, what does that do for Cleveland's lineup then moving forward? I mean, do you continue starting Tristan Thompson? Do you maybe go back to LeBron at the four, like because Gasol is out? I mean, what do you do?
Well, the Bulls are still loaded at power forward. They have Taj Gibson. They got Mrodic. So I think he's still going to stick with a bigger lineup.
Yeah.
And I still think LeBron is more valuable when he can play on the perimeter and play in the post. I think limiting him to the four, it hurts you a little bit because Mike Miller played game one. He didn't look like he was cut out for playoff basketball at all.
That's the other thing is like if you put LeBron at the four, then who's taking his place at small four? James Jones or Mike Miller? You know, J.R. Smith can't move over there, and Shumpert has been dealing with some injuries as well. So, yeah, I mean, your options are really not pathetic, but pretty close limited. To it after that. Yeah. Limited. That's a, limited. It's a much kinder word.
Exactly. It's, yeah. It's a much nicer way of saying it. If here's the thing, okay? In the Eastern Conference, this is the series I'm more interested in, especially now with John Wall being out for the Washington Wizards.
You're talking about you're more interested in Cleveland-Chicago.
I'm more interested in this series.
Yeah.
In the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I was worried about you for a second.
No. I'm more interested in this series in the Eastern Conference because the other series, the Atlanta Hawks, I don't know what it is, guys, about the Atlanta Hawks, but I mean, a great story. It's amazing what they've done this year. But I just, they're a snooze fest to me. Like, I just, they don't do anything for me.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm watching the games, all right. But just in a big picture of things, like, oh, I don't want to watch the Atlanta Hawks.
I think part of that is because, like, no one really thinks they're going to make a title run. You know, everyone kind of expects them to, even if they advance this round, to lose to whoever wins that Chicago-Cleveland series. So it's hard to get, like, really emotionally invested in a team that you don't expect much from, regardless of them being first.
Is it a lack, though, of that one true superstar? Like, you look at Cleveland with LeBron and the Bulls
But that's also Atlanta's strength, right? Is that they don't have that one guy they rely on. Is they're really spread apart. And really, like, I mean, the hardcore basketball fan, like, there's a lot to like in watching Jeff Teague play. Al Horford's a great player. Paul Millsap does a lot of, like, phenomenal things. Damari Carroll is really stepping up. He's a guy who I think the Raptors should be targeting in a big way, the Hawks small forward. Mm. That being said, yeah, they don't have, it's not the same kind of allure as a lot of the other teams in the playoffs because they don't have that guy, that kind of marquee name.
Yeah.
And you know, they still play a great brand of basketball, but yeah, without that fan interest is going to be down a little bit.
Yeah, and that series, I mean, without John Wall now. I mean, it's too bad for the Washington Wizards. No, it's too bad for the Toronto Raptors that didn't happen earlier. But it's too bad for the Washington Wizards.
They still might have lost.
they were playing that bad.
The way the Raptors played, even without
I don't want to give them any credit right.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you. I'm still bitter. You're definitely bitter. I can sense it. But I'm still bitter about the Raptors loss against the Wizards.
I just can't remember a team completely no-showing. First at home, where the NBA is so shifted toward home team. They no-showed in both home games, except for that little run in game one.
Yeah.
And then the game four was just painful.
It was. It was over before it started, it seemed.
That first quarter, when you're down 15 points in the first quarter in the most important game of your life, that's so disheartening to watch.
And it's too bad, because living around here, there's not a lot to get excited about.
Yeah.
And that was the one team we had.
Yeah, you're right. I kind of put all of our Toronto eggs into that basket.
Yeah, and that was the one team really worth believing in. The players are really likable. It's a really fun team, and they just completely crashed.
Yeah.
And everything you kind of believed in, now you're wondering, is this team good enough? Are they exposed? Is the coach coming back?
Well, so getting back to the Washington Wizards, just to save us from...
Yeah, sorry, we got off topic.
Spiraling.
Yeah, we better move on.
It's just spiraling into this despair of Toronto sports and lack of championships. But looking at the Wizards and, you know, coming off of that series, like, okay, they're really seeming to go the right way, and then take it on the Atlanta Hawks, and things were looking good for the most part. And then John Wall is out. I mean, you all but take Washington out of the picture with John Wall being out of the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Washington to win that series, but without Wall, and Beal's been hurt as well. And that's a team that, you know, their backcourt is their biggest strength. So you take that away from them, and suddenly Otto Porter can't have a nice game every now and then. You need him to be a great player. Paul Pierce needs to be vintage Paul Pierce, which, you know, you can't bank on. So their chances are really, really limited as a result of that. So you got to like Atlanta to move forward. But like we were saying, like, it almost doesn't matter because really, like, it's that Chicago-Cleveland series that matters in the East because it's one of those teams, and I could really see an argument being made for either one who we're going to see in the finals. I really believe that.
And that was going to be my next question to you guys. Is this, you know, is the winner of the Bulls-Cavs series going on to the Eastern Conference? Or going to represent the Eastern Conference in the NBA final? You feel so, Dave. Jeff, you feel the same way?
Yeah, I don't think there's a question.
Yeah, no question. All right, then fine, I'll stop. It's 10:39. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. It's Jeff Sammons and Dave Zarum. I'm Jeff Sammons.
Hey, how about that Western Conference?
How about that Western Conference? Let's transition over to the Western Conference. I'm rooting for the Warriors. I really want the Warriors to be there in the end. I want them to win it all. I really do. This is a team that I've enjoyed from afar. You know, rooting for the Toronto Raptors, but, you know, my Western Conference team was the Warriors. And part of it is, I will admit, being an old guy and remembering Steph Curry when Dell was playing here, going out on the court and just taking these practice shots. I'm going, who is that kid? He's incredible. And it was with his brother as well. Yeah. And he thought he was incredible. And it's like, well, he looks exactly like Dell Curry. Must be Dell Curry's kid, as it turns out. And he's just blossomed to apparently a fine adult, but certainly a tremendous basketball player. But the Warriors... and Grizzlies, and they continue their series tonight. The series is all tied up at one. I mean, the Grizzlies went into Golden State and won a game. Not many can brag to have done that this year.
That was the first time Golden State had lost at home since January 27th.
Wow.
Yeah, that's so it feels like it doesn't have to happen often, and guess what? It really doesn't happen often. Yeah.
It really doesn't.
Memphis worries me, though. I'm like you. I kind of want to see Golden State keep advantage. They're so much fun to watch. They're the most exciting team. They have such good shooters, but Memphis worries me. Tony Allen is so good defensively. Mike Conley really sparked them last game. We're talking about this at the break. Dave told me I was a bit crazy for thinking this, but I'm a little worried about Memphis. I think the series shifts back there now. I'm a bit worried after how Curry and Klay Thompson played in game two.
Was that an anomaly, though, Dave?
It was in the sense that you're not going to see the Warriors shoot so poorly, more than once in a seven-game series. I mean, Curry, I believe, was 2 for 11. Thompson was like 3 for 15 or something like that. I mean, that's just not going to happen again. Some of it is a credit to the Grizzlies' defense, and that is obviously their biggest strength. But you're just not going to... How can you bank on that happening once or twice more? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Memphis, I mean, they're a really good team. It's not to discount the Grizzlies. I mean, one name you didn't mention, it's maybe my favorite player in the league, Zach Randolph.
Yeah.
I mean, I love every time, anything he does on the court, it's incredible. I want that guy to succeed. I want to see more Zach Randolph in the playoffs. But Golden State, man, it's a juggernaut. And that the one loss wasn't an anomaly, but it was pretty close, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, and the Grizzlies, no slouches at home, 31-10. This year, so they're a good home team as well.
Yeah, they're a great home team. They're when they play at home, they force other teams to play their style. But the thing about Golden State this year is that they're more versatile than ever. I mean, they can play the defensive game. They don't just rely on that high octane offense.
Yeah, Draymond Green and Iguodala.
Yeah, so that's what guys like Draymond Green and Iguodala stepping up, Bogut, and that's what differentiates this year's Warriors team from last year's, is that the fact that now they're the best offense and they're also the best defense in the NBA, so they can kind of play, you know, it's almost like a choose your own adventure kind of game with them.
I know I'm a little bitter still. Most people tell me I'm crazy. I still don't want to see Vince Carter win.
I was going to ask you that.
I still don't want to see it.
Is there a little part of you that sees Vince Carter with the Memphis Grizzlies and either you root for them or against them? Well, obviously, I know where you stand, Jeff. Dave, what about you? I mean, do you see Vince Carter with the Grizzlies? Would be kind of an underlying thing.
Honestly, like, this is probably a bad answer, but I don't care. You know, like, if he wins or if he doesn't win, it doesn't move
probably
the needle in either direction for me. It doesn't change the way his Raptors legacy goes, you know, for better or worse. I don't think he's a bad person, and I actually really loved him as a basketball player.
Oh, yeah.
So just for that reason, you know, I have no problem with him doing well in his career.
Well, I find with Vince, I'm rooting for him in a different way because of this love-hate relationship we've all had with Vince Carter. And obviously, we know the story here in Toronto, how we loved him, and then we hated him in the end, and we hated him, you know, for a good time when he was gone. And then, you know, this year, just kind of like, all right, you know what? Even maybe last year, he was like, all right, you know what? Things didn't end well. And, you know, Michael Grange had some great pieces on Sportsnet Central and his, the Mag as well.
His magazine profile just got nominated for a National Magazine Award.
There you go. And it was fantastic. Really shed a lot of light on both sides of the story between the divorce of the Raptors and Vince Carter, and it really helped kind of aid me as a, you know, former Vince Carter fan to kind of look back on it and go, well, maybe that all wasn't Vince, and Vince not being a Raptor anymore. So it kind of helped me kind of get over that a little bit, and I thank Michael Grange for that. But now, just completely aside from that, he's become an NBA veteran that was once a star. I mean, a big star, especially here, obviously, but a big star that has taken on this role of, you know what, I'm gonna be a veteran guy. I'm gonna help out the kids. I'm gonna do everything that's asked of me. I'm gonna play here. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna do that. Whatever coach needs me to do, I'm gonna do it. And I'm gonna be the good soldier and do that. And he did that in Dallas, and he was beloved in Dallas for that. And he's taken his act to Memphis, and he's doing the same thing. So from that aspect, I'm kind of never mind Vince Carter, Toronto Raptor, none of that stuff. I'm rooting for the veteran that's taken on this role the last couple of years.
Super quick before I forget, if you go to Sportsnet.ca's NBA page right now, on the front page on the NBA page, Granger's magazine profile is up there. We put it up there this week. So
good.
If people want to check that out, it's really worth the read. That being said, yeah, I mean, few players have he hasn't reinvented his career. I mean, I guess he has, but few players have aged better than Carter, just in terms of like self-awareness, knowing what he can no longer do and what he still can do. So yeah, it's a decidedly different player we're seeing now, but he's done a great job of still being relevant. You know, a lot of guys will get to his age, see their skills change, and not really be able to cope with that. You know what I mean? Like, not like they're still trying to do all the things they used to do. Get frustrated when they realize they can't.
Well, and Vince every once in a while will give you that burst. You know, yeah. just in spurts to remind you of what he used to be.
Yes and no. I mean, like, he had two dunks in a game recently, and everyone's like, oh, the old Vince Carter is back. We saw it again. And you see those dunks. Like, go back and look at those old Vince Carter dunks. Like, we're not seeing anything like that from Vince these days.
All right, but yes, he's jumping. He's touching the rim.
His hand touched the rim, yes.
And you know, I wouldn't go as far as saying, oh, the real Vince Carter's back. Just like, oh, there it is. There's a little bit of that, at least to see here in Toronto.
But yeah, and you see those instincts comes back when he sees that opening in the lane. Like, he does get up and go to the basket.
Yeah.
And it is cool to watch because, I mean, like, it can't be stated enough how great of a player he was when he was here. I mean, there was a time where, like, the NBA was like Vince Carter's league. It was like him and Kobe, and he was just right in that conversation.
Oh, what a time.
It was a short window, but
what
it was still
a time here
window.
In Toronto. I would almost say he's one of, if not the biggest superstar we've ever had here in the city.
Yeah.
I mean, if in recent memory. You want to talk about the Leafs in the 60s or something like that, like, we're not going back that far, but I'm looking at the last few decades.
Star power.
Just star power, like a recognizable face, like, you know who that is, and you become a fan of that sport, of that team, just for that one player, man, it's Vince Carter.
If you're talking about, like, how do I put this? Like, global reach? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Then, yeah, I don't think there's any debate whatsoever. Yeah. Within the city, I mean, I don't know, maybe guys like Dougie or Joe Carter, someone like that, might have more cachet because they were more successful.
But you look at now, and you look at...
Steve that was Nash 20 years ago, right?
Steve Nash is a big part in what he's done for Canadian basketball and what he's done in the NBA to really make Canadian basketball what it is right now with so much Canadian representation in the NBA. But Vince Carter has... a big part of that. I mean, Andrew Wiggins exists, I think, because of Vince Carter.
Yeah, I mean, and I can have this conversation all day because I love talking about this, but Steve Nash gets a lot of the credit, but you're right. Vince Carter is probably the biggest reason. It's a combination. It's Nash, it's Vince Carter, and it's the progression of coaches in this country, you know, to help develop young players like we never were able to before. But yeah, you got guys like Wiggins, Tristan Thompson, who are growing up watching the Raptors play.
Yeah.
And Kevin Durant, who said he grew up a Raptors fan.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Great example.
Yeah, so you have that kind of reach. It's basically Vince Carter's the reason the Raptors got popular. The Raptors get popular, more people are watching basketball, more kids are watching basketball.
Yeah.
And they decide that this is a career route I could potentially go or whatever. I want to play the game and they find out that they're good. So yeah, Vince Carter should get a lot of the credit for it. And I think he does, you know. I really do think he gets his due from that regard.
Having said all that.
Yes.
Still rooting for the Warriors. just to be
Me
clear,
too.
But if the Grizzlies went on and beat the Warriors, which I don't think is going to happen, if that did happen, there'd be that big part of me that's cheering for Vince Carter.
What I would love to see is the Clippers against the Warriors in the conference finals
that
there.
That would be epic. And we got to talk about the Clippers. My goodness. And we talked a lot about Vince Carter. That wasn't exactly, you know, planned, but we had to
conversations and conversations.
Yeah, that's how it goes. But Rockets and Clippers last night, the Clippers taking it to the Rockets 124-99. So the Clippers take a 2-1 series lead. In that one, I mean, Blake Griffin, guys, has
wow.
I know he was a star. I know he was a star coming into the series. I know, but hasn't he? Like, we talked about it with Ovechkin to maybe a lesser extent earlier in the hour when talking about Stanley Cup last. But hasn't Blake Griffin taking his game to the next level?
He was a star coming into this playoffs, but there was no way he was a guy who you can point to and say, this guy can win a series for his team. And now, I mean, like, he didn't win the last series. He didn't win that Spurs series for the Clippers, but it was pretty close. And now you can point to him and say he's one of, like, five players in the league who you could say, like, can absolutely win a series by himself. He's been a revelation in these playoffs. You know, I mean, his numbers... his numbers are unbelievable. They're unfathomable. 25 points per game, 13.5 rebounds, 7.5 assists per game.
Wow.
I mean, it's nuts. He's also shooting 75% from the free throw line, and he gets there often. And that was a huge problem in his career before. He wasn't like DeAndre Jordan or one of these guys that shoots like 20%.
Right.
But he was like a 60% shooter, I feel like, earlier in his career, 65. Like, he was not a good free throw shooter. Now, if he's shooting 75% in the playoffs, that changes a lot of things, too. Mm-hmm. He's just more well-rounded than ever. And he's, you know, we saw the impact of Chris Paul coming back last night for the Clippers. And that's why it was such a blowout win. But they're not where they are without Griffin.
And correct me if I'm wrong. He had a bit of a reputation of being soft.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, not yes, being soft, but also being unable to kind of handle the contact that he was receiving. He'd get really flustered, really frustrated easily, and it wasn't hard to take Blake Griffin out of the game mentally.
That's the big step I think he's taken.
Yeah, it's a great point.
Because he's really taken the burden on that team with Paul coming in and out of the lineup, and it's been so important for that team.
And I mean, that's a team full of petulant babies in terms of the way they react or they interact with referees.
Yeah.
And Chris Paul is the leader of that. But
He's working them. That's what he's doing. He's working them.
Sure. They all work the rest, but Chris Paul is on another level.
Yeah.
But Griffin's even done a better job of that, you know, and it goes back to, like not being flustered, like being able to kind of stay in the moment.
Chris Paul coming back, but Austin Rivers with 25 points last night.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Austin Rivers has been pretty terrible for the Clippers, but Doc is going to keep going with his son, and, you know, can't fault him for that, I suppose. But finally, Austin gave him reason.
Paying off.
Yeah.
J.J. Redick had 31 points last night.
Yeah.
And that too, is part of the Chris Paul effect, I think, is just being able to find open guys in a way that Austin Rivers, or they were playing Lester Hudson a lot with Paul out. Those guys couldn't do it in the same way as Paul.
DeAndre Jordan with 15 rebounds as well last night. So the Clippers with a commanding win over the Rockets. Tonight, Hawks and Wizards, they continue their series. Well, kind of tonight, 5 o'clock. And Warriors and Grizzlies to do so at 8. As we continue Sportsnet Magazine Live, a look at your Toronto Blue Jays, who are 500. Yay, 500. 3,000th win last night in franchise history. So we'll talk about the Toronto Blue Jays doing away with the Boston Red Sox last night. With Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum, I'm Jeff Sammet on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The top topics, the headiest headlines, the debatiest debate. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Pitch is inbound. Breaking ball grounded by Sanchez out to second. Taken by Gomes. Step on the back one. Back to first. Ball at two. An inning-ending double play. And here comes manager John Gibbons. What a night for Aaron Sanchez. A career-high 7-plus innings. He pitches into the eighth. A walk and a ground ball get away from him. And already the crowd standing. 4-0 Blue Jays here in the eighth inning. A 22-year-old rookie in conversation with Russ Martin gives the ball to John Gibbons. Listen to the hand for Aaron Sanchez.
Little Andre 3000 on the 3000th Blue Jays franchise win. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Jeff Sammet. That's Jeff Simmons. That's Dave Zarum on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're going to talk about Tom Brady later on this hour. But we talk about your Toronto Blue Jays, folks. Now a 500 team, courtesy Aaron Sanchez's 7 innings last night of 2-hit ball, 5 walks, 3 strikeouts on 108 pitches. Aaron Sanchez, Jeff, we'll start with you now, 3-2. And, you know, as Shai Davidi talked about it a lot on sportsnet.ca, and I felt the same way that with Aaron Sanchez, he is such a gifted talent. You kind of have to wait him out a little bit. If he's got a few rocky starts where he doesn't go deep in ball games, you're going to kind of have to wait things out, because he does show you every start that there is that talent that's there, and you have to be patient with him. And I'm not sure the Blue Jays are in any other position but to do that. But having said that, they're staying patient, as they should be, and Aaron Sanchez giving them 7 innings last night.
Yeah, I think there's no real other choice. With Norris down in AAA, he had some control issues, and Stroman out for the year. Who else is going to start if you take away Sanchez?
Yeah.
And yeah, I get the bullpen was struggling early, so maybe you want to put him in a role he was so good at last year. But you saw last night why you kind of stick him out, and that kind of rewards you for your patience. Because Sanchez's talent level is ridiculous. He still walked too many batters last night. There's still some control issues. But
yeah.
Getting pitchers to go deep in games is so important for this team. And I think he was the first pitcher this season to go at least 5 runs and 5 innings and not give up an earned run. And that's huge for this team. They've gone 2 good starts in a row, which has sadly been so rare for them this year.
But also with Sanchez, I mean, he's shown signs of improvement start to start, I think. So it's kind of like the natural progression for him to finally put it together like we saw last night, right?
Yeah. And, you know, last night, a big inning for me with Aaron Sanchez's start was the top of the fourth, where it was a couple of walks, a hit by pitch. Before you know it, you blink and it's the bases loaded. And then he got a strikeout and then induced a double play where we saw Sanchez. And as that inning was unfolding and very quickly, I thought, all right, well, here's the inning. here it is. Here's where Aaron Sanchez runs into problems. This is going to be a really long inning, and we're going to give him four. Like, this is how it's going to be. But no, he got out of that inning, and he did well from there on out for the most part. So it was nice to see him get into trouble last night, but to also get out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, and this time of the season, I mean, that's what you want to see from guys like that, because you want them to be able to play in hopefully big games later on the season, right? So to be able to get that experience under your belt in a game situation like that. I mean, when you're a young pitcher, I mean, that's what it's all about, is just experience, mm-hmm. outings, throwing more big league innings together.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot to like from what we saw last night.
Yeah, it's good to see. Now, we talk about patience, Jeff, about the Toronto Blue Jays, and I'm not saying that they're not exercising patience with some other players, but, you know, in cases like Dalton Pompey, Miguel Castro, Daniel Norris as well. Yeah, you can see what they were giving or not giving you, and saying, all right, you know what, we probably have to send them down and let them come back up, a better player as a result.
Yeah, it's all kind of, there are three kind of different scenarios. With Pompey, it's not really a patience issue. I think Pilar just beat him out.
I think it's a combination.
Yeah, and you know, I think
Pompey, I mean, he was admittedly not comfortable here.
I think you want him playing every day rather than him playing in a bench role.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes a lot more sense from the Jays' perspective to have him playing every day down in Buffalo. Pilar was just so good, you almost had to have him on the field, and Saunders is starting to come back, so where's Pompey's spot? With Norris, just the control is such an issue.
Yeah.
Right? And the team was pitching so poorly, you kind of had to get him, maybe let him get in rhythm, and his arms... You weren't seeing the stuff you saw in the spring.
Yeah.
With him, you're not seeing the stuff. You're not seeing the control. So he really needs to go down, Dom. That was almost an easy decision for the Jays.
Well, I mean, let's go back, though, Dave, like at the beginning of the year where we saw the Blue Jays break camp with a lot of youth. Mm-hmm. And all those players that we mentioned, Devin Travis, which has obviously worked out. And it's been fantastic for the Toronto Blue Jays. What an addition he's been in an entertainment factor as well. For the fans, but in breaking camp as youthful as they were, and even making that decision going into spring training. But do you kind of look back at that decision and say, yeah, that was the wrong decision for the Toronto Blue Jays in retrospect? Or, well, no, this is the direction they're going in, and I'm okay with that.
I don't think it was the wrong decision because, I think it was a decision made out of desperation more than anything else. I mean, when you start with that many young players, that's... It's not necessarily a good thing. Do you know what I mean? Like it just all that means to me is that we don't have any better veteran options. So it's cool that you're going to give these guys a chance. But I mean, if you have aspirations of being a playoff contender and you're starting like 3-4 rookies to start the season, something's not quite right there. With these guys, I mean, the knock against sending them down, and I think I heard Greg Zahn saying this, is that it's a bad move because it's going to kill their confidence. You put all this faith in them a few weeks back when you said that they were going to start the season with the team. And now all of a sudden, a few bad weeks and you cut the cord and you say, you know what? No, go down and you'll come back when you're ready. Maybe. But yeah. I don't buy into that.
Well, did it feel though, have we seen like maybe with a Dalton Pompey or whatever that we've seen, oh, this is Travis Snyder all over again. Like we're going to go down that road again.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really interesting, comparison just in terms of handing someone the keys maybe too early, and then now they're thinking about is whether or not I'm going to get sent down or sent up or whatever, as opposed to just thinking like, how about I put the ball in play?
Yeah, what I got
to
do.
But you know what? Like to that point where this is going to mess with them mentally, like you're saying, like a Snyder situation or something like that. I don't see it. Or if that is the case, then that's on Pompey and Norris and those young guys. If they're going to get sent down and it really rattles them mentally, you know, if they can't handle that kind of demotion, then I don't know what that means for them,
yeah,
for their long-term,
sure,
chances anyways. Do you know what
and
I mean?
You like, saw Ricky Romero. Look what happened with him.
Exactly. Like, I think we'll see a lot about what these guys, like, about their mettle. Do you know what I mean? In terms of how they're able to take this going forward. Do you take it and build on it? Or do you just get flustered and just get frustrated and throw your hands in the air and say, what happened?
Maybe not a month into the season, but did we really expect, Jeff, for the Blue Jays to come up with all this youth and expect all of them to pan out? I mean, I think they looked at this division and they said, this is a winnable division. We're not going to overspend here. We're going to see what we have. We're going to have some money to play with. They could have had more had they been able to deal or decided to deal Deonno Navarro, but they didn't, but that's okay. So maybe having some money to play with and then seeing what they could add later on in the year.
Yeah, Dave alluded to this before. There's a depth issue. There wasn't really much of a choice, and Saunders was hurt. So you didn't really have much of a choice in center field. You didn't know if Pilar can do it yet.
Yeah.
And even then, Saunders is an average player.
Exactly. Yeah. Saunders is just a guy. And with the pitcher Stroman went down, that kind of, I don't think Norris was originally in the plans before Stroman goes down.
Or at least maybe Sanchez wasn't necessarily in the rotation and maybe would have been in the back end.
Yeah,
exactly. So that kind of, that was forced to you. And the Blue Jays, you can't expect everything to go right. Nothing ever goes right for these guys.
Well, no, but does everything go right with every ball club? I mean, everybody has its peaks and valleys, but I know what you mean with the Toronto Blue Jays.
It's just simple odds. When you have this many young players, not all of them are going to work out.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, you look at those that haven't worked out yet, but you look at those that have, and you look at a Devin Travis. I mean, he's hitting leadoff right now, and Jose Reyes is absent.
And that's the thing, when you're starting such young guys, unproven guys, you just don't know. Like, there's no way to forecast what's going to happen. You just got to put them out there and see. So we saw that Norris wasn't ready. We saw that Pompey wasn't ready. And we're seeing that Devin Travis is the next Joe Morgan. I mean, things just happen that you don't expect, right?
Mm-hmm. Josh Donaldson, a new addition, of course, to the Toronto Blue Jays. He's got 7 home runs of this year. He's got a .308 average. I mean, he had a moonshot last night. I mean,
yeah. He's fun to watch.
He is fun to watch. Like, of all the additions, like that's the one that I'm looking. Man, I'm loving Russell Martin these days, obviously.
Was it just Laurie that the Blue Jays gave up for? Laurie and someone else?
No, there was a couple of prospects.
Yeah, there was a bunch of prospects.
Because, man, like, talk about upgrading a position.
I think so. At a position they didn't need to upgrade.
Yeah.
Like, they saw a player in Josh Donaldson and said, okay, we could get him for Brett Laurie, and they went, and company, and they went and did it. They didn't necessarily need to improve in that position. They mentioned Russell Martin. They didn't necessarily need to go out and get a catcher, and they did.
Yeah.
But I think those two additions, I'm loving watching them. I mean, Russell Martin struggling with the bat to begin the year, and I didn't think that was going to last. He was going to come around, and boy, has he of late. I mean, they both have been fun to watch, but just watching that home run last night with Josh Donaldson, I was like, wow, this guy's been a lot of fun. A nice addition to the ball.
And I don't know how much you watched the Oakland A's last year. He was a really good player.
Mm-hmm.
I had him on my fantasy team. So
so you kept a watchful eye on him. That's
it all comes out now.
I had him on my fantasy team last year, and he was outstanding. He was one of the best players in terms of wins above replacement WAR. And I was just looking at the WAR stat on Fangraphs now. Russell Martin's 5th in the league in WAR. He's almost he's almost got 2 games.
And he's obviously a guy who, like, impacts your club.
Yeah, and
a
people
lot of
were
ways.
Calling him David Clarkson after that rough stretch.
Oh, come on.
And I couldn't believe that.
Come on. Poor David Clarkson.
I'm speechless right now.
Poor David Clarkson.
I think Russell Clarkson. I think callers into the Wilner show are calling him that.
Oh, he's an adjective now?
Yeah.
Poor guy. Yeah, bad for David Clarkson.
But Russell Martin's such an important player. And now that he's been hitting like crazy, and Donaldson upgrades, he's so reliable defensively, and he's so durable. Mm-hmm. That was the thing with Laurie. Laurie was hurt every 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And different injuries. And I don't know if you could call him injury prone or what, but it was just happening in different areas of his body. And it just he was out a lot. I hear that. Colabello last night with a home run. As well, and he continues to play in the outfield. They stuck him in right field last night. It was, I was joking about it at the game last night. An outfield of Valencia, Pilar, and Colabello. That's what I expected in early May. That's what I had drawn up. But Colabello was looking more comfortable as games go on with the Toronto Blue Jays. It's nice to see some offense from the bottom of the lineup from him.
Yeah, and I mean, and again, like, going into the season, that bottom of the lineup was. There were a lot of holes, but that was probably the biggest one. I mean, there's such a disparity between the top of the lineup and the bottom. So when you get that kind of production out of, like, the 7-8-9 spot, it does change the entire way that opposing teams kind of attack you. He's been a great surprise. I mean, his numbers are crazy. I know it's a really small sample size.
Yeah, well, it is.
And
but
he won't keep this up. I hate to break it to everyone.
Well,
but
Colabello was very good in Buffalo.
That's a good point. I mean, like,
Well, you're in the call-up.
He earned the call up, and it's another one of, like, just like the young guys. You got to put them out there at this level, at the major league level, and just see how they produce.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to forecast this kind of thing. So if he's a guy who can sustain it, that's a huge find.
Look, it was a 7-0 lead last night heading into the ninth, but it was nice to see Steve Delabar come in, throw 14 pitches, get a couple of strikeouts in the full inning of work. It'd be quite a coup and a great story to see Steve Delabar make his return and stick in Major League Baseball. But Jeff, I mean, to add to that bullpen and for Steve Delabar to come around and throw that into the mix, that'll be nice for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, they really need another reliable arm at the back of that bullpen.
Yeah.
Because Castro, he wasn't at this point in his career.
Started off all right.
Yeah, he's a young guy.
Sure.
And Osuna's been a great surprise.
Yeah.
I was so excited about Castro to start the season.
Yeah, he had the the power pitching. And
Both of them, Osuna and Castro, they didn't look afraid of anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they didn't care who was up, what uniform they were going up against. They were like, I'm bringing in my stuff. And they attacked you, and it was fun to watch. But again, like we talked about, you know, with young kids, you know, you never know. You're going to have to send them down or knock them down a peg and bring them back up, and hopefully they'll be better for it.
But with Delibar, I mean, you really hope that he's able to sustain this, because he seemed really shaken up when he didn't get the big league job earlier.
He was
right?
not happy about that.
Yeah. Like, he took that very personally, as he should have. And that kind of goes back to what I'm saying about what we were talking about with Pompey and Norris and those guys. Mm-hmm. Like, the way Delibar reacted to the demotion, that's what you want to see out of almost everyone. You want them to get pissed off. Incentive to prove the Blue Jays wrong, you know, when they do come back.
Maybe not publicly. Maybe he doesn't have to make it known to everybody.
Yeah, no, fine. Yeah, about it, but don't ruffle those feathers, I guess. But internally, definitely. I mean, or at least within yourself. I mean, you want to be pissed off, give yourself every reason to come back and prove others wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I think we are with Delibar right now. So if he can sustain it, it's a great blueprint for the young guys also.
Yeah. That's Dave Zarum with Jeff Simmons as well. I'm Jeff Sammet. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet Magazine Live. This division, and kind of touched on it very, very briefly, but this division, this is a winnable division. And, you know, I was talking about last night, we were in a box last night with some guys around here, and we were talking about this division. Food was great, by the way.
I'm sure.
Especially when it's free. It always tastes a little bit better.
when you don't cook it.
We see the Blue Jays at 500 mark. They're 4 games back. Game behind Tampa. 4 games behind the New York Yankees. Didn't really feel like anybody's necessarily running away with the division, although, you know, there's some more separation between the top and the bottom. But I think this AL East story has, you know, many chapters to go through. Throughout this year, I think we're going to see a lot of teams, you know, jumping places, moving up and moving down, and everybody kind of leapfrogging one another. But when the dust settles, I mean, who, Jeff, are you a big believer in this American League East? I mean, are you looking at the Boston Red Sox and saying, you know, they're going to be better? Because they've been bad of late. But do you feel that they're going to get better, or are the Yankees going to hang on to first place? What do you think?
You know, I'm not a big believer in Boston. Their pitching is awful. At least the Blue Jays have some upside in their young arms, and they have Sanchez, and they have maybe Norris down the road. The Red Sox are very underwhelming in the rotation. You see their pitching just is really not that good. The team that surprised me, and I really shouldn't be that surprised by them, is the Yankees. And they're the leaders right now. They got, I think, a 3-game lead. But
yeah, on
the thing that's been really impressive about them is their pitching has really been good, and their bullpen is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And when you have a bullpen that good, you're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah, they got a nice 1-2 punch at the back end.
The Betances-Miller combo really gives them an edge, especially over when you see the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays are the best team at the top. They're by far the most top-heavy team in the division. They have by far the most upside, but they still have these huge holes, which makes you wonder. I think they're going to be bouncing around 500 for a while. The Yankees, with that strength, that killer strength of that bullpen, I think that gives them a big edge in the division.
Yeah.
That gives them a real strength that the other teams don't have.
But you know, one team that no one ever talks about in this division, and especially heading into the season, no one said a word about them, is Tampa Bay. And we talk about the terrible pitching with Boston, questionable pitching on the back end with Toronto. I mean, every team in this division has pitching issues, except for Tampa, who have like 5 all-stars pitching for them.
That's without Cobb.
Exactly,
know?
Yeah. I mean, and they're still really strong and deep. I mean, Chris Archer, the list goes on, whatever. I don't have to list them. But that's going to sustain Tampa throughout the year. I think they're going to be there the whole time. I mean, whether they make the playoffs, I don't know. But they're going to be right in there. That's going to be an ongoing issue for the Jays, who have played really poorly against them so far.
Yeah, I think that the pitching is going to keep Tampa in the conversation. I'm not sure it's going to be much more than that when all is said and done. But just briefly back to the Yankees, and Andrew Miller with 13 saves. And this is someone that does not have closer experience, but maybe that's overblown. And I looked at it, admittedly, I looked at it in the offseason when you know, the Blue Jays were looking for some bullpen help and Andrew Miller was still out there. And I thought, well, okay, so you're going to bring in this guy to be a closer? Like someone's going to bring him in to be a closer? He doesn't have closer experience. If you're going to go shopping for a guy to be a closer, wouldn't you want somebody with closer experience? Well, the heck with that. He comes in, he's got 13 saves for the Yankees.
Yeah, I wrote about it back I think it was December. I thought if you took money out of the equation, I think Miller should have been the one guy the Blue Jays really should have gone after.
Mm.
The Yankees paid him pretty handsomely for a guy with no closer experience.
And he was getting paid.
Yeah,
someone was going to pay him.
Alex has been hesitant to pay relievers in if you've seen, they give him a lot of short-term deals, and he knows how volatile the position is.
And he's been burnt because of it.
Yeah. And frankly, they don't have a guy like Miller who can come in at the end of the game, and that's the one thing they're missing. That pushes everyone down almost to a better spot. Cecil's in a better spot. Loop's in a better spot. And it makes the Yankees so much stronger to have those two fireballers at the end of that rotation. I mean, the end of the bullpen.
But, you know, I don't know if the closer experience thing really matters. I mean, he's proving it doesn't, but whether or not it's a singular example or could be like the start of a bigger trend, who knows? But, you know, I think when you talk about the closer position, it's more just about the guy's mental makeup. You know what I mean? That kind of FU mode that you have to be in from the second you step out of the bullpen until the game's over.
Yeah.
So either a guy has that or he doesn't. Miller clearly has that. So whether he's been the quote-unquote closer on previous teams or not is almost irrelevant if he has that mindset.
That, by the way, while we're on the Yankees subject, this is something that we were talking about last night as well. Alex Rodriguez hitting 661, and, you know, just kind of like, as a brief aside.
Amazing.
When this should have been a big occasion, well, at least the Yankees had anticipated it to be a big occasion, and of course they're at odds about his marketing bonus. And look, I'm on the Yankee side of it, and it's not because I just can't stand Alex Rodriguez, but I'm on the Yankee side of it because this is not a marketable player. He's very unlikable. And, you know, busted as well.
Yeah.
So this is not a player in which you can market. And when it's a marketing bonus, I mean, it's in the description. It's right there.
It's right in the
description's
name.
Description's in the name right there. So you can't market this guy.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because, like, who do you pass? You pass Willie Mays.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty substantial.
Fourth all time. It's incredible.
So, like, I was thinking, like, when we look back on the record books, and to be honest, I don't know the gap between him and the next person, but when we look back and we see Alex Rodriguez's name right up at the top, are we going to be able to really look at it, like, in the same light that other guys? I mean,
same with Barry Bonds.
But yeah, it's the same debate.
I don't look at it the same way.
Yeah, I mean, neither do I, and it's... I don't know what you do about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't take away home runs, but there's got to be a way to give him his due for what he did, but also to kind of, I guess it's the asterisk.
I guess it's
problem,
the asterisk
right?
thing. Babe Ruth is ahead of Alex Rodriguez. Of course, Babe Ruth is third overall with 714. Hank Aaron with 755. All familiar numbers. And Barry Bonds with 762. Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy company for him to be in.
It is. I mean, it's unbelievable. And, you know, I can't help but look at Ken Griffey at 630, who's sixth overall, and wonder just how many. And you know, other names that are on the list: Jim Thome, Sammy Sosa, you know, Frank Robinson, Mark McGuire, but Jim Thome, seventh overall, just for hanging around.
That's
so long.
It's a longevity thing. Yeah. It's being able sustaining it over 20 years.
Wouldn't expect him that high.
No, I wouldn't have. If I asked you who was seventh overall,
he was like a consistent like 7, 8, 9 years of like 40 home runs. I feel like.
Yeah, he did it consistently.
Someone has to look
that
up.
Then even when he tailed off. He was still contributing at least off the bench. But yeah, he was consistently hitting 30, 40 home runs for many, many years, then dipping down to the 20s and it kind of hung around to get to, the total he did, which was 612. And then of course he was done, but wow, what a brilliant career for Jim Thome. And just another thing on A-Rod, he's got 7 home runs this year. On top of that, with the New York Yankees, Mark Teixeira has 10 and maybe, as surprisingly, if not more so, is Teixeira off to a hot start for the Yankees.
And yeah, like the bullpen is the big strength on that team. But yeah, like we definitely, I'm glad you brought that up because these guys who we were starting to count out, you know, everything pointed to these guys being in their decline.
Yep.
To come out of the gate like that, I mean, that's a massive reason why they're 19-11 right now.
Yeah, and in first place in the American League East, Toronto Blue Jays in third place in the division, and the Blue Jays will continue their series against the Boston Red Sox today. Hutchinson's on the mound. For the Toronto Blue Jays taking on Joe Kelly. It's a 12:30 broadcast, start of 107 First Pitch on the Sportsnet Radio Network. You can watch it on Sportsnet as well. And as we continue Sportsnet Magazine Live, look at Deflategate and Tom Brady and what could be for the golden boy of the National Football League. That's Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum. I'm Jeff Sam at the Sportsnet Radio Network.
A taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet magazine. Here's Shannon Proudfoot.
The New York Yankees and Alex Rodriguez are trapped in a very weird marriage. Most Yankee fans can't stand A-Rod and just want him to go away. But they're also in the awkward position of being forced to cheer for him if they want their mediocre team to do well this season. A-Rod, for his part, keeps saying he just wants to play baseball and help his team, though even he acknowledges that probably no one believes a word he says. I went to opening day in the Bronx to talk to Yankee fans about their problem child. I felt like I should have hauled a therapist with me. But the bottom line is, Yankee fans are stuck with him. And now they're trying to process their own way through the unique stages of A-Rod grief.
This story and more appears in the latest edition of Sportsnet magazine, available on Next Issue and in the Apple Newsstand.
Is the Super Bowl tainted? Should that be a
What do you guys think? Neither do I.
No, it's not. Is that what you're saying?
I said, I asked what they thought.
I asked you what you thought.
I said, no, absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Do you care what others think, say, and are writing? You're getting pummeled, Tom. Maybe not here tonight, but across the country. Do you care? No.
There's a lot of people that don't like Tom Brady, and I'm okay with that.
Get in line. Jim Gray, Tom Brady discussion. Sportsnet Magazine Live with Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum. I'm Jeff Sammet. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network. Deflategate and the Wells report as a result finding that I'm pretty sure that Tom Brady is more guilty than innocent as far as deflating of footballs and overseeing it and knowing it and understanding that's going to happen. And his trainers at his beck and call and well, Brady knew of it, and after denying that he knew all about it, and reports are indicating that a punishment will be handed down, and there could be a suspension, a rather notable suspension. We're talking multiple game suspension. First off, if it's 6 to 8 games, Jeff Simmons, should Tom Brady be getting a slap on the wrist that harshly?
I think that's a bit harsh. But I think you have to give him something, because what kind of message does it send if you're allowing guys to cheat? And clearly he was doing something here. The report didn't come out and say it. There's no like exact evidence, but you can tell he was doing something. And people already have criticized Goodell's relationship with Patriots owner Robert Kraft. They're a little too buddy-buddy. And if you let this slide and you let him off for this after clearly you got your star player cheating, what kind of message does that send in the league? You can't just be like, okay, this is okay. We'll give him a fine. No, you got to do something here. And I think 4 games is the right number.
You have to do something, I suppose, like a slap on the wrist, a game, 2 games.
I was kidding when I said slap on the wrist for 6 to 8 games.
Okay, good. All right, well, then
That's not my definition of slap on the wrist.
Okay, well, then I got nothing to say. No, but I mean, like, because I've heard too, like 7 games somewhere in that ballpark. And if that happens, that's an atrocity. I mean, that's... Part of it is you feel like it's Goodell trying to save face with everything that's been thrown his way, all the negative press and just, you know, how everybody hates him, you know.
Why? Last year was tumultuous.
And, yeah, no, for good reason.
He's partly to blame for that.
No, for good reason. Like,
big part to blame for that, yeah.
He is to blame for that.
Yeah.
So it's probably him, you know, overcompensating in a way and saying, well, you know, I'm going to come out really harshly on this. But if he does that, that is such... BS, because you look at that, like, let's say it is 7 games. That's 3 games less than he suspended Greg Hardy. Greg Hardy did horrific things, beat the crap out of his girlfriend. Tom Brady asked someone to make a football 6% lighter. And for it to be even in the same ballpark, I mean, what kind of message is that sending? I mean, I think...
Well, look, I'll say this. If I have someone under my employ or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And he did something like Hardy did. Mm-hmm. He would not be under my employ ever again.
No.
So I would have the strictest, stiffest of penalties for people with that kind of behavior.
Good.
Having said that, Tom Brady cheated. Like if the evidence is pointing that way, and it's certainly looking like it is, if he's knowingly cheating at the sport in which he's not only playing but excelling in, and then lying about it, that deserves a hefty suspension.
I really don't think this is a big deal.
The deflating of the balls.
I genuinely don't think it's that big of a deal. I mean, yes, he should get, if you cheat, you get caught, there's a penalty, a game, two games, we move on with our lives. Is this that much different than a pitcher doctoring a baseball?
Well, that's cheating too.
Yeah, but there's a million guys who openly admit it, and we know a ton of guys have done it, not been penalized for it. We don't necessarily think of them any worse because of it.
But with baseball, it's happened with so much regularity that it's almost been accepted, and I don't necessarily think that's a good thing
either. But here's my thing. You really think Tom Brady's the only quarterback who said, you know, I like the football a certain way, so let's try to tailor it to my liking?
Maybe not.
But it was the way he orchestrated the whole thing. You can see from those text messages from the ball guys that was in the Wells report that maybe they're doing it. It was the way that he lied. He refused to give his phone in. It's an integrity issue. And what does that say that you just allow Brady to do and say, oh, everybody does it? That worked when I was 9 years old. And then I realized you can't use that excuse anymore. For him to go through all that and then lie, refuse to take part in the investigation, you have to do something. This is an integrity issue. You can't just allow star players to do whatever they want. This is absurd.
So like what I'm hearing is that a big part of the problem was the fact that Tom Brady lied about it.
Well, yeah.
Like to me, that's like boo-hoo. Like, guess what? Like,
well,
I don't know why
it's
we have
not
to,
just that. I mean, that's on that, top that of
adds,
everything else.
That adds to it.
If he lied about it and if he did it and then was asked about it and he went, yeah, I did it.
Okay, but we have this image of like a pro athlete, especially if someone of Brady's stature. They have to be these role models. They have to be these kind of the moral compass for society. I mean, it just might be the case that very popular athletes like Tom Brady, like they aren't good people. Like they cheat to get ahead in life. They say no when the answer is yes, et cetera, et cetera. So like part of it is like we just need to come to grips with the fact that these guys are going to do anything they can to win. And sometimes it might be making a ball slightly lighter. I mean, here's another point. Does it take away from in the Super Bowl when there was so much scrutiny on the balls and he still put up great numbers and had a big performance?
On top of all this, there's so many layers to this thing, at least in my opinion. This is a team that doesn't need to cheat. They don't need to.
Yeah.
On top of everything else, I still think they win. I still think they're as great as they are, but they still cheated.
But I think it's part of like that's part of the Patriots mindset, and I truly believe it's not just the Patriots doing this. I don't think it's just Tom Brady. He's the guy who got caught. He's the guy with the biggest microscope on him.
He can't be the first one to have thought of doing this and have gone through with it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
could be the case, but nevertheless, he was the one that was
caught.
Yeah,
so yeah, I don't have any evidence to support what I'm saying. It's all just like a hunch.
Well, it's just, I mean, the game's really old. A lot of people have played it.
Yes.
This seems like a very simple thing to have done.
But
it's monitored for a reason. There are rules in place because of it. He thought to get around it and couldn't without
getting
caught.
Part of the, I really think, you know, you said the Patriots don't need to do this to win, and they don't, but part of being in an organization like that where the goal is so singularly focused on winning is finding ways to get around the rules and to do things in your advantage. I mean, I think of the San Antonio Spurs, was it last year when they broke the air conditioning conveniently broke in their stadium? Like, that kind of stuff happens.
And yeah, but did they do it?
Hell yeah, they did it.
Come on.
Sure, I got an inside
Come
source.
On.
No, no, no. Yeah. I have no idea, but it's... let's just say, like, it doesn't happen for a lot of other teams. It's very convenient that a team like the Spurs had that kind of advantage in their favor, just like the Patriots. I think it's the same mindset where you do anything you can to win, whether we like it or not, whether it's within the rule book or not, whether it's fair or not, it is another question, and the answer is no.
I don't buy it.
Listen, I get that people are trying to find an edge to win. I have
this
no
is
problem
life.
With that.
Like, this is just
yeah,
like,
I get it. I almost applaud that, but you got caught.
You got caught.
The guy's name in the text was the deflator.
Then suck it up. I'm not saying that you take away, you know, any trophies or anything like that, but you suck it up. You're going to have to sit out as a result.
So he got caught. There's a penalty for it. But when we talk, it goes back to the first point. When we talk about 6, 7, 8 games, that to me is so beyond ridiculous for this kind of penalty. And also the fact that this is going to be his legacy now. Everyone's going to talk about a deflated football when we talk about this all-time great quarterback. I mean, that's just the reality.
I think it'll be something that's talked about, but in the end, I think it's going to be, I think what the description of Tom Brady is going to be: great quarterback, maybe the best of all time, a winner,
lying
but
cheater.
He also cheated.
Yeah,
I think the Super Bowl almost takes away that legacy issue, because with the proper balls, he beat what had been the best defense and he torched them.
Yeah, I mean, what if he had been a quarterback that's never won. And then finally this year he won, and then we found that out. Like, you'd be a different storyline.
Oh, the optics.
Yeah, it would be like
different.
It would be like that woman who ran the Boston Marathon, and it turns out she took the subway for half of it.
Right, which is something I would totally do.
Yeah, of course. But that's what I'm saying.
Do you ever have to take the beep test in gym class?
The beep test? What's that?
I've blocked it out of my memory.
I used to cheat on the beep test. It was to test your stamina, and you'd run suicides in the gym, and it'd beep, and it would get faster and faster.
How'd you cheat?
Each level.
How do you cheat on that?
I would sit out for the first four levels, slyly go out to the side, and come back as it came on.
Oh.
Well, listen, while we're in the confessional booth, we used to do neighborhood runs. You have to, exactly what it sounds like. And we would just sprint right around the corner to the end of the run and just kind of park ourselves there and wait till everyone else kind of came around.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm in a room with a bunch of cheaters, guys.
So that's why, you know what?
If I had known this.
Tom Brady, man, you're good in my books. It's all good.
But we're not professional athletes.
No, you're not.
There's a reason we're sitting here.
If you guys were lifting stories and putting them up on Sportsnet.ca, yeah,
no,
guys.
That's a no-no.
Cheaters.
Yeah, and we'd get suspended.
You're out of here, but that's not happening.
But like, so okay, he did cheat. He did get caught. The slap on the wrist is to me the I don't know if fair is the word, but that's the right way to go. Suspend him a couple games, sure. Anything more than that, I think Goodell's trying to save face, and it's looking elsewhere to solve other problems, if that makes
sense. Look, a big part of this as well is that it is Tom Brady, and that if this is a thing, deflating balls, and Tom Brady couldn't get away with it, then others are not going to do it. Mind you, a lot of eyes are going to be on big star quarterbacks or big star players. And if you're, a marginal type of player and you can get away with it, who's watching me? I'm not Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. There's also that school of thought. But I think the NFL is going to make an example out of him. I think there's a lot of factors that come into play into what the decision is going to be. But if it's a hefty suspension, I think what plays a part is the fact that he did, in fact, cheat and lie about it, that he is Tom Brady, and that it is Roger Goodell, and that he had a terrible year last year, and he's looking to save some face. I think all of that comes into play.
But there should be a scale. There should be a scale for the crime. Do you know what I mean? Like if you commit murder and you commit petty theft, the penalty is drastically different.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about what the penalty for Brady should be, I think that should come in mind too. Because really, deflating the footballs like that, like, was it that massive of an advantage? Is that really why they routed the Colts in that game?
No, but it's beyond that. But what you said, that's kind of the issue with Roger Goodell, and that's part of why he's been criticized so much. There's no real structure in place. He kind of just decides things as he goes along.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And you saw last year how ill-advised he was.
Yeah.
And yeah, Dave's right that you probably shouldn't be sending suspensions to send a message, but just the reality, and that's how kind of optics
work. Like I said, I'm cool with one or two games, but when we talk about, you making him an example, which to me suggests like 6+ games, then that's, I think, egregiously.
I'm with you on that. It's a bit more. I rolled my eyes when I first saw it. I'll admit that.
Well, look, there's also Spygate from years ago. I mean,
this has come up for Spygate.
How many times are you going to let an organization, I'm not going to say get away with it, but how many times is this going to come out of one organization?
See, that's where legacy might come in, more than Brady with the whole Patriots thing.
Ah.
Because this is the second time they're being dinged now.
It goes back to what I was saying, though. That's like the mindset in a way, it's hard to come to grips with it, but I believe that is a mindset of extremely successful organizations, and to a degree like successful people as well, is that way to find what can I do to advance? Like, what can I do for my advantage? Whether it's in the rule books completely or not, whether it's a step over the line or not, what can I do to advance? And that's, we can have moral issues with that, but there's no question that that exists in our society, and it certainly exists in sports, and the Patriots have been a great example of that.
I think, look, if you're going to get away with something in sport, it's a referee didn't see that, well, I'm not going to correct them, and it's to my advantage. I'm not going to correct them, and I'm going to move on. Like Derek Jeter. I remember an at-bat in Tampa. I don't think it was in his last year. I think it was like the year before that. There was a pitch that was thrown inside to him. It hit off the knob of his bat, and he acted like it hit his hand. Mm-hmm. And he could have been reacting to the sting of it, or he could have been acting. I don't know. But let's just say, just for my story here, that he was reacting to the sting of it. And the umpire said, well, you're getting first base because you were hit. Obviously, the umpire got that wrong. If I'm Derek Jeter, I'm not going to turn around and say, no, it's just the sting. I'm just, I didn't get it. I'm not going to correct him. I'm going to say, well, you got it wrong. You didn't do your job correctly. I'm going to take the base. So if if an official is going to get something wrong, fine, I'm going to get away with it. But, you know, if it's Derek Jeter shaking his hand off, acting as if he was hit on the hand when he didn't, well, I think a form of cheating, and I'm not cool with that.
But I mean,
what happened to the integrity of sport? Shouldn't this be part of the sports fan lexicon? Shouldn't we be looking at the integrity of sport and saying, well, this guy is cheating? What are you laughing at, Jeff Simmons?
That died so long ago.
Why do we have to live in a world like that? I don't get it. Why do I have to be Mr. Innocent over here?
Because life's not perfect. It's just like, this is a reality.
I know life isn't perfect. I get it. Believe me, I get it. I think we've all been handed some bad playing cards and some cheating, bad hands every once in a while.
Cheating is a part of sports. You know, it's something that people need to come to grips with. Like, sometimes you get caught and there's penalties, but it's a part of sports. It's a long list. Sportsnet Magazine. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. We did a whole issue called the Cheaters Issue, mm-hmm. where we had guys talk about, you know, things that they did to bend the rules, put it that way, or, you know, use things to their advantage. Mm-hmm. It happens, you know. Sometimes you get caught. Sometimes you get away with it. Sometimes it leads to wins. Sometimes it doesn't make a difference in the outcome. But guys do this all the time. And it's just a matter of when we learn, how we learn to come to grips with that.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with the cheating, but if you get caught, you should be punished. And that's where I come around to.
Fans like you, it's guys like you that condone this kind of behavior, that allow it to be in professional sports.
I don't condone it. I'm just...
You do condone it.
I'm just, like, realistic about
it.
You
just said you don't mind cheating, both of you.
I don't...
I never said that. I said it should be punished.
I don't...
Well, if you get caught, you should be punished.
I just know it's a reality.
I don't condone it. I'm strangely at peace with it. Is that any better?
It is strange. It is strange. And you might be in the majority, and I would say the majority is strange. That's what I'm saying.
People are strange.
That's all I'm saying. All right, so let's say he gets like 6 to 8 games. Jeff, what does this do for the New England Patriots this year?
Oh, it really hurts them because that division got a lot better this year.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the big thing New England's had that these teams don't is the franchise quarterback. And if you look, New England's got a tough schedule. They got to play in Dallas at the start of the year. They got to play at Buffalo, who really got better this year with Rex Ryan and a lot of good moves. This division, the gaps close a bit. The Jets even have a really good offseason. They didn't do anything weird, which is so unlike them. But
they drafted really well.
Yeah, they drafted well. Miami got Sue. Without Tom Brady, that changes things. Because when Matt Castle came in a couple of years back when Brady hurt his knee, they had a much better team. They had Randy Moss still going, and he was the Hall of Fame guy. They had a number one defense. New England doesn't have that anymore. This team is completely carried by Brady.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Garoppolo is going to have to come in, and you just don't know what he is.
Matt Castle?
He could be another Matt Castle, or he could be a bust. He could be Kevin O'Connell. He was the guy they drafted a few years ago. He's now coaching quarterback.
Yeah, so. I mean, if they do throw the book at Brady, I mean, he kills the Patriots next season.
Well, then even reason to suspend him.
No, I forgot we were dealing with a Patriots hater here.
I dislike the New England Patriots, but that's not what brought me to my conclusion about Tom Brady.
I understand that.
Kiddingly so. Yes. I know I joke around a lot.
He's angry, but logical.
Yeah, exactly. I can separate the two. You have to do it in this job. It's been Sportsnet Magazine Live. Jeff Simmons, Dave Zarum. Spirited conversation throughout the 2 hours. Thanks for this, guys. Appreciate it.
Anytime. I had fun.
Have a good weekend, man.
All right, man. We'll continue. I'm hanging around until 12:30 I'll get you set. I'm not going to get you set for the Red Sox and Blue Jays because Mike Wilner and company are going to do that as of 12:30 with their pregame show between 12:30 and 1. And then first pitch at 1:07. But I'll have Sportsnet today for you, and we'll look at the NBA playoffs. Kurt Heelan is going to join us, and we'll talk to Kurt and look at the NBA playoffs. Hawks and Wizards, Warriors and Grizzlies taking place as both those series tied up at 1. We'll look into it as we'll join you on Sportsnet today. I'm Jeff Sammet. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network.